Welcome to Know Your Risk and Insurance Coverage with Risk Pro Net, where we will discuss all things insurance for you and your company. Risk Pro Net is a network of independent agencies who offer specialized insurance across business sectors. Regardless of where you are in your insurance journey, we want to invite you to join us to think about insurance differently. Know Your Risk and Insurance Coverage with Risk Pro Net provides answers to all your insurance questions. Welcome again to Know Your Risk and Insurance Coverage with Risk Pro Net. I'm Chip Ehrenchild, and today we have the privilege of talking with Garrett Kane. He's with CRC. He's the president of the executive lines, and he's also their chief innovation officer. And I think you're going to see that come through when we talk about parametric today. And so today we're going to cover a lot about parametric insurance, what it is, what it isn't, how it can be used in the marketplace today, and a lot of the benefits that it's providing that you may or may not know about. So Garrett, hey, thanks for being on the podcast. We're glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Why don't we just start off with parametric insurance? What is it? Where did it originate from? What was it intended to do? And how do we even come up with this phrase, parametric insurance?
I don't actually know where the word came from. I haven't looked that up, but the key thing that makes something parametric is that trigger is an event rather than loss that's adjusted. I read an article about this that's on LinkedIn somewhere, if anyone cares to look it up. But it's if you know computer coding, it's like an if this, then that statement. So, you know, if it rains a certain amount, if it floods a certain amount, if the ground shakes a certain amount, then there's some sort of payment that's automatically agreed between the carrier and the client.
These things were typically used, right, for, an example, a golf event or a weather-related. Was weather where parametric first started? I think my introduction to it, whether it's 4 or 5 years ago, was being more weather-related than anything else. And I know you're going to tell us today that is no longer true. But is that where it started because they had good data? Or what role does data play in these parametrics of if this, then that?
Yeah, weather was a big part of it, and it related to kind of also like crops and agriculture. Like Swiss Re was a leading company in the space. And some of what you would see is there were like big parametrics done in like Africa, where, you know, if there was a drought, there would be a parametric payment to help cover things. And so, you know, some of the original versions were heavily property based as well. So, you know, if there was a certain amount of flooding, or if there was a certain amount of wind, you could have a parametric payment that was paid automatically. And so those were kind of the derivatives of the concept, because they act a little bit like a derivative, like a financial derivative. When you look at them and you do have this payment, comes a question of like, is it insurance or is it like, you know, some sort of financial product? Or sometimes it's even like some of them are even structured not as insurance and are structured as like a warranty or like a guarantee. And so with Swiss Re, when they started doing them, you know, they would track, you would have to track your losses and document them. So you would get the whole payment, but then you would have to say, these are the things that I use that payment for that make this insurance, and document those things, which then in turn obviously helps, you know, if from a taxation standpoint, I don't know if everyone knows this or not, but like when you get an insurance payment, it's tax-free because you paid taxes before you paid the premium. And so that kind of documentation would help make sure it's still insurance and actual insurance, and make sure that payment was treated as such.
So we look at it as an insurance product in the brokerage world, right? Is it instead of a financial product? Is there a reason it's ended up in our laps versus being sold somewhere else? Is it because from a risk management standpoint, we're trying to fix a problem that has typically been fixed by insurance and maybe no longer is capable of doing it? I know we're going to talk a little bit about that later.
Yeah, well, it really is insurance, right? So, and it just has a different trigger. If there's a hurricane and you have hurricane expenses, then that's something that was an unexpected event, and you have now unexpected expenses associated with that. And if it's paid out to you all at once, then, you know, that should be okay. So we really are the best place to be distributing these types of products. They are risk management products. They are insurance. You know, some that aren't can be scheduled as kind of like a warranty or a guarantee.
So it's not traditional insurance, but it's supplementing it, right? So what are you seeing right now in the marketplace where these are being used? Like, we have wildfire exposures in California where I'm at. You're starting to hear about parametric products that could come into play to help supplement what you can't find limits in the property market. What are we seeing today?
Yeah, well, there are a bunch of examples. We'll start with some of the traditional, you know, short tail examples. So short tail, long tail, for those that might not be in insurance every day, is just how long the loss might run effectively. So like if it's a property policy and there was no fire, flood, you know, wind kind of loss during the year, you get to the end of the policy period and it's over, you're done, it's clean. So that's called short tail. Liability policies for lawsuits of different types tend to run for years and years and don't close up for a long time. Those are called long tail. So traditionally we would see parametric policies in the short tail space, and traditionally we see them, and it's growing in the property space. So some examples would be, you know, big companies were looking at doing property insurance stuff on a larger scale, but what's becoming more common now is like smaller ones. And so like I even buy for myself at my house a parametric earthquake policy. And so I forget the exact numbers on it, but like if the ground shakes a certain amount and it's close enough to my house, then within a few days I'll receive an automatic payment of, I think it's $20,000 or $30,000. And so to your point of starting to see things that are a bit more supplemental, they're really great products for events like that, for events like fires, events like earthquakes, flooding, hurricanes. One of the reasons I think governments and insurance departments should really be in favor of these products is that when you have traditional insurance, even if you take like a New Orleans scenario and every single one of those people had been insured, traditional insurance still has a lot of time before money goes into the hands of people, generally speaking. You have to adjust the loss. You have to look at the house, see what the damage was. You know, meanwhile, you're kind of, you know, up in the air, and governments wind up bearing the cost of that and dealing with what we do with these people and where do they go and all of those types of issues. Parametric policies become more common, like the type of one I described, where you get a reasonable payment at the time of the event. That really starts to help everybody. That gets money in people's hands very quickly, and it starts to kind of, you know, help solve a lot of those problems associated with these events.
That's interesting. I don't know that I've heard someone talk about the social benefits on a scale as you're mentioning for parametrics. I think that's a very fascinating topic. What about the data needed to underwrite these products? Who's underwriting these things? Where is it coming from? Is there innovation outside of the traditional carriers? Is it starting in London? Where is this coming from, or how did it get started that you know about that you can share with us, and who's doing it now? It's sure fascinating.
Yeah, it's very data driven, of course, right? It has to be, because you know, you come up with these models that are sort of algorithmic almost, and you really need to know what you're talking about before you underwrite a class. The data is coming from all over the place right now. There's lots of insurtech startups that are working in the area. They're doing data work above and beyond and using new models that we maybe haven't used before. So like the earthquake policy that I mentioned before was started by a startup company that had heavy expertise in earthquakes. So like you mentioned, we're seeing the same thing around fires, we're seeing the same thing around weather. So it's not necessarily from any one source, just because it depends on what it is. But it's heavily data driven, and it has to be. Some of that too, you know, leads into some of the carrier benefits and just sort of some of my thinking about carriers in the future anyways. When you think of like disrupting insurance, an insurance carrier, you know, does a handful of things. They distribute a policy, they underwrite a policy, and they have capital, and then they handle a claim. Those are the four things. When you look at a parametric policy compared to a normal policy, in that kind of a scenario, some of the benefits that carriers get are automatic underwriting. So if you've done the data part right and you've done the analysis right, then you just plug in an address, you plug in, you know, a value, and it spits out, you know, this is what that would be priced at based on a parametric policy. And so there's very little, in theory, there's very little manual underwriting that's needed once you have a model done that you're comfortable with. The other benefits to it are that there's no claims adjusting. And so if the if less than that statement goes through, the ground shook enough, there's automatic payment. So there's these other like soft costs where carriers benefit from not having to underwrite like they would before. They benefit from not having the claims adjusting they would before. And so it has definitely has some efficiencies that way for carriers as well.
Wow. So you talk about the carrier of the future. That I would think some of those would like that to look that way.
Yeah, I think, you know, for the world of insurance is changing so much right now. You can, you know, people learning that variable cost and outsourcing distribution is a lot easier than hiring your own distribution force. And if you can do more algorithmic underwriting, that helps. And then if you, you know, and the capital can cover lots of sources. And, you know, that could be a different podcast on capital for insurance.
I would like to do that, actually. So I would imagine with the buzz of AI over the last 8 months, AI has to play heavily into the future of parametric and what you can do. Do you see it transitioning away from just property to more liability type claims at all or other types of products? How niche can this become? And is there a limit to what can happen here with parametric? Is there a ceiling like it works well for this, but not that? Or is it still too early to tell?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost pretty early. And there's some places, I'll start with the last part first. There's some areas that I don't think work terribly well for a traditional home loss is a good example, right? Like, you know, if the house does have damage from a flood or something like that, it's hard to make that full parametric and replace traditional coverage because it's probably not a whole home loss. So I don't think parametrics, you know, will probably ever work too well for that type of a scenario. But where they do work really well are you know, payments that can be automatic or payments that are sublimits or retention fills or, you know, those types of losses, it really does have a lot of benefits to everybody.
The other buzzword that was in our industry for a while then went away, but blockchain. And, you know, blockchain was 4 years ago or 3 years ago, right, in every magazine article every month. You haven't heard blockchain. How does blockchain tie into parametric, and does AI bring blockchain back, or did it never leave? Or give us a little education on that if you can.
Yeah, sure. So one of the benefits of a blockchain type model is that those are effectively smart contracts. And so smart contracts do work really well with parametric policies because, again, a smart contract is the if this and that statement, and so is a parametric policy. So it's pretty easy to put blockchain or I'll say crypto type, you know, Web3 is, you know, what we're calling this type of stuff now.
You're going to have to define Web3 for us. What does Web3 mean?
I'm not even sure I can give the best definition of Web3. But basically, there's a lot of like fintech associated with Web3. So I mean, I could give a company example in this space. There is a company called Assuro. It was the first licensed reinsurance company out of Bermuda that's entirely crypto backed in Web3. And most of what they are insuring right now are parametric policies that they then are using crypto to back and as automatic payments. And it's all very open. You can see everything. Outside investors can go there and they want to invest in insurance. You can do it that way.
Crypto backed reinsurance on parametric products. Now, I don't think we could have made that headline up 3 years ago. What's the future going to hold? I don't think I've heard those three together in a sentence. That's awesome.
Yeah. So there it does work really well. I mean, when blockchain articles started, there were a bunch of like really bad articles that came out talking about, you know, even blockchain wiping out wholesalers, which shows that you don't really understand blockchain or wholesale. but it does, you know, the technology, the concepts there do work actually really well for parametric policy.
It's just so fascinating. What type of resources are being plowed into the data for companies? Are companies now mirroring what we're hearing in other industries where they're hiring a lot more data scientists or data analytic kids and trying to build these algorithms themselves? Is that getting outsourced? Are you seeing investments by the carriers to move into a new space? Or do you think there'll be new carriers doing this going forward?
Yeah, there's some of all the above. There's, you know, a number of MGAs that have started, you know, working on niche products in the space. And there's data behind all of it. There's heavy, really smart people behind a lot of it. And it's very niche and specialized because it relates so much to the specific products that are involved. Like there's a company called Sensible Weather that does weather guarantees for amusement parks. That one structure actually is like a warranty, is like a guarantee versus insurance. It's a nuanced difference. But, you know, if there's bad weather, you can get your money back.
On your ticket price?
Yeah, on your ticket price. Well, but it is heavily data-driven. And kind of as you mentioned before, because it depends on the area, you know, it is starting to move into new areas. We're trying to push it into some new areas. So while historically these things have been really centered around, you know, property, weather, agriculture, you know, we're launching right now the first parametric public D&O policy as an example of it changing, which is unique for a few reasons. One, you know, one is it's D&O, and no, there hasn't been a big innovation there for a long time.
But you've never heard parametrics and D&O in a, this may be a first, right? On, I haven't seen the two together, right? So what's the benefit of using a parametric product for D&O? What do you hope to accomplish?
Yeah, well, you run into some of the same issues that you do in traditional insurance, and you have a claim come in, you have expenses right away. The claims process can be long and slow. And so, you know, with that product, again, you have to have the if this. In that case, the if this is a two-part trigger that relates to a stock drop for public companies. So some trading stock that drops. And then there has to be a class action lawsuit that references that. So if those two things happen, then there's an automatic payment. And in that case, the payments are a bit lower than like a full D&O policy. The limits are lower.
I'm just curious, have you had some action on that product line? Is that attractive?
It's just launching right now. So we haven't even announced it yet. So
this is a first. We've got groundbreaking news.
But it'll be announcing very soon, maybe this week. But it's definitely gotten a ton of interest. We obviously had to vet it a lot in advance. There was an awful lot of math and data work that was done to get carriers comfortable with the capacity. It's interesting too, because if you think about the benefit to carriers, I mentioned all those other benefits before about less underwriting, you know, easier claims handling. Another benefit the underwriters get to those books of business is, you know, traditionally D&O is a long tail business. You know, this allows some of that business to be short tail. So, you know, if you get to the end of the policy year and the stock didn't drop and the class action didn't happen, tail's done. It's over. So there's some benefits there. We're exploring a cyber one right now. You know, people that have looked at websites being down, you know, if your website goes down for a period of time, we're working with a company called Machine Cover on areas where payments have changed. So, you know, there was a fire in the area and you're an outside diner. And because of that, you now don't have any diners for 3 weeks because people aren't going to stay outside. So, you know, we're working with companies on that to help small businesses. So the data used in that case is data around historical payments to that area, the region, the vendor, or about, you know, restaurant in this case.
Yeah, that's sure fascinating, right? So air quality issue, smoke related more than likely, right? But to have that, which certainly would help that business owner when you talk about speed, have some money to offset that revenue.
Yeah, and there can be, you know, I think we all sorts of like random things that can cause that, right? And so, you know, like in that case, it doesn't have to be that. It can be almost anything. It just has to, you know, this area used to make this much and now for whatever reason, something happened and now they're making 20% of that or 10% of that. And so, you know, that's a, you know, it's kind of like a different type of business interruption insurance.
Totally. Really, right? It's so fascinating to think. I've always thought, you know, our economy is so diverse in this continual niching that never stops, right? And just here's another example in our industry of this. It seems like this unlimited amount of niching as data becomes available and someone has an idea to put it to use and see if someone will buy it. It's just fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's pretty cool actually. There's a lot of depth to our different verticals that we have that are really making insurance products better.
In the competing with your competitors, do you feel like you just need to continue to be leading in this area just to stay a step ahead? And because you're kind of on the forefront of this, I would think, right?
Yeah, we're definitely on the forefront. Yeah, it's going to be an area that continues to grow. It's a space that I like a lot personally. I think there's a lot of benefits to our industry overall. And so, I think 10 years ago, I wouldn't have thought you could do a parametric D&O thing, you know, but here we are, we've got one done that, you know, so it's a space that's evolving quickly. And, you know, frankly, as data gets better across everything, the more data there is, the easier it is to do algorithmic underwriting. So it does lend itself to these types of options.
Yeah, it's going to continue to speed up. Is for the average broker across the United States working a middle market brokerage firm or wherever they may be, what do you see they need to know about parametrics to help serve their clients better? You have any advice on what brokers need to be thinking about?
It's kind of a hard question to answer in some ways, in the sense that it's so niche-y. And most brokers are, if you're a generalist, you're not so specialized, so you might not hear about the niches. If you're a specialist, you should definitely be kind of keeping your ears open for finding out what's out there in your spaces. There are some spots that historically have had more parametric stuff, like the property space or like agriculture, but now it's expanding into lots of other areas. So, and it's moving very quickly. There are a lot of startups thinking about, those product design. And I'm pretty heavily into all this space, and I'm never surprised by what I don't know.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to say it, right? Like it seems like consistent or constant learning for quite a while to go.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I do think your point about specialization is true, right? We know brokers are starting to specialize more. How do you take a look at what space you're in, and whether that sounds like it could be hospitality, ag, construction, special events, whatever it may be, and there's already these products out there. What's the next one that you can be part of to help drive it, or if you think it could bring value? How do people want to learn more about it? Is you just contact your local regional CRC underwriter? Is that the best way to go? Is there a specialized unit within CRC right now?
Yeah, I mean, for our stuff, we've got a few different areas going on, and so if you contact anybody at CRC, if they don't know, they'll find out. The company's gotten pretty big. Nobody has all of the right answers at their fingertips, but if you're curious about things that we're doing in this area, just reach out to your CRC broker. We'll be happy to find out for you.
The other thing I missed at the beginning was to talk about what a valuable partner CRC has been to the Risk ProNet network and has been for decades. And so we really appreciate that and all that CRC does for our group and the value that you bring to each of our agencies. So thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate the network and being involved. So thanks for having me on.
Yep. And Garrett will have Garrett's information in the show notes. If you have a question or you heard something today you want to talk to him about further, please contact him and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks.
Thank you. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Know Your Risk and Insurance Coverage with Risk ProNet. For more information about Risk ProNet, please visit our website. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter for insurance insights. From everyone at Risk ProNet, we want to say thank you for tuning in and see you next time.